Well, thank you for joining us today for our podcast with conversations with icons in our industry. And we have with us today Bill Littlejohn. And I tell you, Bill is someone that I look up to. And if you've worked in this industry a long time, you get to know people and their level of integrity as well as experience and knowledge. And I would put Bill, obviously, at the top of that list. So, Bill, first of all, before I get too far in introductions, thank you for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here, Eddie. I always enjoy my conversations with you. I know that for certain.
Well, Bill, I mean, I'm not going to read his bio because it would take longer than we really want to take for a conversation. But let's just say this. He's a Cy Seymour recipient who Cy Seymour had a huge influence on my career, like it did a lot of people. If you've not read his book, you ought to find it. It's one of the best books on fundraising in the industry, real practical. But it says what the industry feels about Bill, and I join our industry in respecting him and his work. You know, there's a lot of things you could say about Bill. He's a talented professional. But to me, what has attracted me to Bill for a long time is he's a man of integrity. And while this industry is full of people who feel the need to compete, my theory, Bill, is that if I light my candle and I light someone else's candle, my candle's not diminished. And Bill's that same type of person. He's quick with advice. He wants to help. He wants to see people succeed. And he has a heart that's just pure gold. So, Bill, again, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Eddie.
So I've given Bill two questions I want him to cover. One is, what has he learned in his illustrious career that's really made a difference? And then I'll address the second question after he answers this first one. Bill, so what have you learned that's really made a difference?
There's a couple of perspectives to provide. You know, we talk about we're in the fundraising profession, and the fundraising is a tactic. It's a strategy. It's a function that we practice and do. And then we talk about being engaged in philanthropy. And I am the senior officer of philanthropy for this wonderful community asset in San Diego, Sharp Healthcare, and the aspect of philanthropy being the love of mankind and this aspect of doing good for others and making a difference. And so what I really learned is, sure, I may be the tactical fundraising professional, but if I'm an officer of philanthropy, my job is much more sort of institutional based of driving the institution to fundraising success and being much more of a facilitator of this power of philanthropy than just being the fundraising professional. And I think that's taught me so much in the fact that, you know, my success is only from the standpoint of the institution that I'm working with or on behalf or for, whether it's as a professional or as a volunteer. And I do a lot of work in the volunteer space too, and I've learned that. So the idea of that fundraising tactics work from influencing others to have the same sort of culture of philanthropy and dynamic of doing good for others, and that marrying of that together has been a great lesson for me and aspect of defining my work and my profession more so than just sort of technical skills or how many years I may have done something.
So do you feel that what we do is noble then? It's what it sounds like you're saying.
Absolutely noble, because I think what we do more so than just about raising money in a dollar or a goal is we do teach, guide, lead, coach, counsel, mentor others to engage in the doing of good through philanthropy, through primarily giving, and it's giving money, but also giving time and expertise. So in the end of the day, the influence that we can have on larger groups of people will only sort of raise more money than it would we doing it ourselves. And so the aspect that I've always said this, you know, I might be good at what I do, but I'm much better when I do it with others. I have more success, whether with a CEO or a physician or a board director. So therefore, I think of that sort of the job of influencing and engaging and building relationships is much more valuable than me, you know, making, you know, 10 solicitations because that's just my job.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea.
I guess with the heart, then.
Right. Yeah, the nobleness is that, you know, in the end of the day, some of this is sort of a scripture. You know, you teach a man to fish and they can live for a long time. And the aspect of that we as professionals can influence others through teaching and coaching, whether it's other professionals or it's boards or CEOs, whoever it might be, is that that becomes the really the noblest of work, is that you can then leave where you are and knowing that a community or an organization can be strong because you've helped, you know, build a culture or created a dynamic of which others can then be successful.
You know, Bill, this call may go a little bit longer, and I apologize for that, because I thought of a second question that you just provoked. Since what you have said is true, and you have led with excellence. I mean, anybody that knows you knows that you've excelled at, I guess, everything. I don't know exactly where the standard of excellence came from, if it came from your parents, or I don't know where it came from, if it's just innate in you. But what was your path? What is your path in pursuing excellence? How did you get there?
You know, I think it was the aspect of that. One is to be appreciative of true legacy, and not just legacy from a gift. That someone leaves a gift for as a legacy. But the legacy of people and communities and culture and dynamic, of which created many of the things that we value in our lives today, whether it be in education or in religion or in museums or art or culture or in healthcare. And I think that past thing that if you know about remembering the past, but building on that, and I have become somewhat of the sharp historian, because our story is so filled with wonderful philanthropy of time, talent, and treasure, that if by respecting and appreciating that, we can then teach the future generation that they have to have the same sort of feeling about their community of which they will be willing to engage. And so my path is, I've always been so inquisitive about, well, how did this hospital come to be that I'm going to work at now, or I'm going to help with as a consultant, or help with as on a project? I said, this hospital had to come about some way or the other. And more than often than not, it was people in their community who had a drive that I hope I can emulate with others. So I think that's a wonderful dynamic that all of us in the profession should never lose sight of, is that we have wonderful histories and true legacies that if we share and teach those, they will inspire people oftentimes more than just the current need. They will then create that. And I think that's this sort of wonderful dynamic of you know, even how we got our name is a great, powerful story that that we think we got to make sure that we teach others. So that's really led me, is the aspect of that, you know, we do things in fundraising and philanthropy to help people we'll never know or meet for the future. But we're only here because people came before. You know, you mentioned, you know, Cy Seymour's book. Well, Cy's been gone a long time, but his message still resonates for those of us who are going to practice in the future. So in the end of the day, you're not just reading a book, a sort of fundraising book, you're reading a history book.
Yes.
And so that can lead us to saying, well, he was doing great things with communities, not just himself, many years ago. So there's a lesson in that. And that, so that my path has been, and I've been a history buff. And I think that aspect of philanthropic sort of history has also sort of guided me quite a bit.
Well, I feel bad about taking more time than I ask you to give, but I want to ask all of us have had mistakes. In fact, I've said repeatedly that Casey says we built a great company on all of Eddie's mistakes. There's an awful lot of truth to that. But what mistake have you made, and what did you learn from it?
You know, I think that, and maybe it's a combination mistake of, I mean, I can certainly take blame for that. I think there's this aspect that, like, sort of where we started with, that the fundraising people are the people you hire to raise the money. and you know, sort of, okay, it's a tough project, a tough initiative, then I'll just go ahead and go okay, and I'll be the hero or whatever and try to raise the money, me, because that's my job. And I think the mistake was sort of thinking that, and that ultimately it never really is that successful. And that was a great learning experience, is that, I've done a lot of campaigns over the years, both, in my profession and volunteer, and not every single one was successful. And I think one of the, sort of failures was not, giving up on what the fundamentals of philanthropic success are, which require, community engagement and relationships, and sort of just sort of that old punting, and let's just sort of see if we can go get the money one way or the other. And, in the end, it's not even about the money that you didn't raise. It's about the relationships you didn't develop. Which
is true.
And I think that we can all get caught up in chasing the goal. And sure, we have performance expectations and all the things we do and the metrics we look at. And in the end of the day, and I've always said that, there are two reasons that a campaign is successful, and the inverse is why they fail, is that they are successful because you engaged enough people or organizations or foundations who are capable of making contributions, and you do it in the most effective way. It's in person, education, great stewardship of the relationship. And so when it works well, it works incredibly well, but when you don't do that, if you don't do enough and you don't do it well, you kind of get the opposite results. So I think my failure is not sort of honoring the process or sort of trying to shortcut, when in the end we might have raised an amount of money, but we look back and say that really didn't have the desired effect we wanted.
Oh man, Bill, you're just full of wisdom, my friend.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, and I think, again, we're in the business of money generation and, generating funds and resources, but sometimes we do get sort of trapped in that. And we've learned a lot to say, when we do a big initiative at Sharp, it's not about what we need to raise or what the goal is. It's about the vision Sharp has for the transformation of healthcare and the investment of which Sharp is making on behalf of the San Diego community, of which we want the community to partner with us in this vision, not because we don't have the money, but we want the people to make not a gift out of need, but a vision, and they make it as an investment, not just, just giving because we ask. They see the value of that. So in the aspect the goal is not so much the dollar goal for philanthropy. It's the amount of resources that Sharp is willing to invest on behalf of the community and the partnership in which we have. So that number ends up being more valuable than the thermometer with the amount we have to raise on it.
I hope this podcast is circulated wide and listened to often, because I believe, Bill, you just summarized what excellence in philanthropy looks like.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that.
Well, Bill, thank you for your time. I feel bad about going over what I asked
no,
you to do,
right.
But it was valuable. And if you
we'll do it again,
yeah, we will. If you ever want to learn how to do things, Bill Littlejohn's excellent mentor. Bill, thank you for your time, and everybody, thank you for joining us on this podcast. We look forward to visiting with you again in the future.
Thank you.